three of us this afternoon, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Standing by. Standing by. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session of the October 21st, 2020 Portland City Council meeting. Please call the roll, Keelan.
Good afternoon, Madam President. Hugh Daly, Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Thank you. We have two items today. Could you please read the two items together, Keelan? Oh, sorry, we're supposed to do the rules of order and decorum, right? Let's go to Laurie, the city attorney.
Thank you. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to speak briefly about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Thank you, and thank you especially for correcting the split infinitive. That's really given joy to my heart this afternoon. Now, please, Keelan, could you read the two items on the afternoon agenda?
841, accept guarantee maximum price of $79,607,637 from Kiewit Infrastructure West Co. for the construction of the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Secondary Treatment Expansion Project. 842, amend contract with CH2M Hill Engineers, Inc. to expand design, permitting, and construction support engineering services for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Secondary Treatment Expansion Program, project number E07947, not to exceed $14 million.
Thank you. Colleagues, the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant is the state's largest, and it operates around the clock throughout the year in sun and rain, and especially rain when the plant treats a surge of stormwater collected in our big pipes in addition to sewage. The Bureau of Environmental Services STEP program, which is the Secondary Treatment Expansion Program, marks the largest upgrade to the treatment plant in about half a century. The plant is old, and this program will deliver multiple necessary improvements. The Secondary Treatment Expansion Program will increase the biological treatments of stormwater, which is a regulatory requirement. It will replace aging buildings and infrastructure to provide a healthier work environment for essential workers. And all new infrastructure will meet the city's green building, energy, climate, and resilience goals. The program provides significant subcontracting and workforce diversity opportunities through the city's first implementation of the Community Benefits Agreement passed by resolution in 2017. So it's really important to note this is a Community Benefits Agreement project. It's not in the Community Opportunities and Enhancement Program, which we'll hear about tomorrow from the auditor. So it's exciting to bring this report to you today. Commissioner Hardesty, be patient. We will indeed get to the breakdown of the opportunities that have been made available to the community, because that's not always something that I ask about as well. The procurement report today provides highlights of the first guaranteed maximum price agreement reached with the contractor and associated construction diversity plan. And we will also go through why it's an amendment. Here today with a presentation are Lester Spittler, the city's chief procurement officer, and Muriel Geiser-Teufel, a STEP program project manager. We will also hear from several STEP team partners, including Nikki Pozos from the Formation Lab, Andre Barr from Group AGB, and Bill Marucci from Kiewit, the STEP general contractor. The STEP program, which is the largest upgrade in the city's treatment plant, involves the complexity of working within an aging plant while keeping it operating continuously and safely as design and construction occurs. Thank you to Muriel's team for their continued work in managing this complex project. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to the team.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. My name is Muriel Geiser-Teufel, and I'm the program manager for STEP. And I will share my screen. The presentation. Okay. So I will start right away. As Commissioner Fritz said, we are here for two council requests, but since we haven't been in front of council since 2018, we're going to take the opportunity to give a little bit of an update on what the project is and why we're doing it. And we will focus on a support program for certified partners in professional services, specifically in the contract we are seeking an amendment with today. And we will spend time on the first construction CBA passed since the resolution passed in 2017. So the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant, the largest in Oregon, is located on North Columbia Boulevard, so in North Portland, and it's a critical asset to the city. It serves every resident, every business, every visitor coming through the city. We like to think that most people don't want to know what happens after they flush or after they brush their teeth, and we would like to keep it that way, but that requires a significant investment in the treatment plant. Most of all, the treatment plant protects a beloved Portland feature, and that's water. It protects the Columbia River, protects the Willamette River, and we like to keep it that way. The plant needs to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Usually we say rain or shine, but now we also add through COVID and through fires. We have a lot of essential workers that have been going to the plant, working at the plant day in, day out to keep it running, to at least keep that sort of issue to not bring more problems to the year 2020. So especially when it rains though, it's especially important to the treatment plant because since the 2010s, when BES has put the big pipes along the Willamette River, the big pipes collect the stormwater collected from the city area, and that gets combined with the sanitary water, and it's all conveyed to the treatment plant. So how we treat all this flow at the treatment plant is a regulatory driver for the STEP program. So that's a lot. That's a lot of water. So how that water is treated is really that driver. In fact, we did get into a mutual agreement and order with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and we signed it in 2011. And we had multiple conditions to it with a compliance schedule. And BES has met every single one of these milestones and requirements since 2011. And this one step pertains to the last condition, which is starting up the new clarifiers by the end of 2024. With that, however, the plant is getting a little old, and when the scope of work for the clarifiers came up to meet the regulatory driver, we also realized that there are a lot of aging assets surrounding the clarifiers that we would either need to connect to, or they were already planned in our CIP, but very adjacent to the area of the clarifiers. So we've added these other elements to the project to provide a more effective delivery. So you can see here a couple of pictures showing the state of the plant, and you can see a lot of rust on the equipment and just generally some dated facilities. All these are going to be upgraded through the program. And here you can see an aerial of the treatment plant. The core campus site with most of the process equipment covers about 37 acres. And in the yellow boundary line here, this illustrates the what we call the step area. There's some other areas that we're gonna touch, but they're not as significant at here as this one here. And what's interesting is when you compare to the 1970 picture, you realize that those are really the same facilities. Here I'm pointing to some of the staffing and storage facilities that have been there since the 70s. We're going to replace these. We'll put the clarifiers in that area. This solids handling building, that's a significant part of STEP. It was built in the 70s, does not meet seismic resiliency code. And that's why significant improvements are required for that area. So all in all, STEP will provide multiple benefits other than the meeting the regulatory obligations, but you know, essentially getting rid of old pipes, old electrical conduits, risky failing equipment that our staff is, maintenance staff is having more and more difficulty in maintaining it just because there's so much old that you can work with. Overall, when you replace it with newer equipment, it will result in more effective operations. So that would improve the operational budget for wastewater operations. With this, there are a number of elements that touch on the sustainability aspect, and it will reduce, adding the clarifiers will reduce the chemical use during rain to treat the wastewater. Obviously, we're going to meet the sustainability goals for buildings and facilities, but one of the biggest benefits is probably the reduction in the trucks that we are sending to Eastern Oregon every day for our biosolids land application program. With more effective equipment, we're going to reduce the volume of solids that will go out, and therefore it will be good from an operations perspective, but it will reduce our impact for carbon emissions related to trucking. And during construction also, there's a good program Kiewit will implement to meet the clean air construction measures with engines and heavy equipment and waste diversion. So with this, there's a significant amount of work to do by 2024, but we're pleased to say that despite 2020 being a little having changed our plans a little bit, the team has been able to continue being on schedule. So we are 100% on schedule to date. We're actually a year ahead in what we thought when we thought we would start the construction of the clarifiers. So it is a good place to be at this point. So it's not the first time we come to council related to STEP, but and most of these items are related to contracts. So all these consulted contracts, we have three major contracts. And we also have, we received your approval for using a CMGC, the Construction Manager General Contractor approach for delivering the program. And I will speak to that a little later. So here, we're not here today to request these contracts, but I wanted to bring them here for context. We have three major contracts for professional services associated with STEP. One is for engineering by Jacobs, which acquired CH2M Hill for design services. We also have Stantec for program management support, and we have Kiewit, which is offering pre-construction services, so before they get to construction. All these contracts have goals for DMWSBs that are meeting or exceeding the aspirational goals, and they're all on track to meet and exceed the goals. So all in all, these three contracts provide about 18 million are committing about 18 million to certified firms, which includes the 3 million to certified firms that we're requesting today for the Jacobs contract. And we will get to the disaggregated data and where those dollars are allocated. So the benefits with the approval of the CMGC approach, we really benefited from that approach early on. Part of it is because we were able to bring Kiewit on board during early in pre-design prior to a 20% design milestone. So that gave us a chance to really start early on planning for the CBA during construction. How would they meet the goals of the CBA? But it also gave us significant input on for early findings, informing the design, informing us about the cost, the actual cost of the project, so that our planning estimates could really be truth for what the actual conditions are. And so big findings that have increased our complexity and cost are the seismic, conditions to meet seismic requirements for the new facilities, aging and interconnecting infrastructure, how are we going to sequence the work and where are the boundaries so that we can minimize our risks. So all that combined together gave us the chance to get realistic cost estimates early, which came at an increase from our planning level, but it was early enough that BES was able to prioritize the overall CIP so that we could stay within the Bureau's rate increase despite the increase in cost for STEP, because those improvements are critical and prioritized for the Bureau. So with that, it also gives us a chance to manage the amendment requested for a design, because the complexity has increased for the initial outcomes we were seeking for the project. And that requires us to do the amendment with the design for design services. So the amendment for CH2M Hill, CH2M Hill and Jacobs are the same company. Jacobs has acquired CH2M Hill, but on the contract it stands as CH2M. The initial contract was 28 million as approved by council. And today we are requesting an amendment of 14 million, or not to exceed 14 million, that would carry us through the end of construction. This is based on our 30% design. We have a good idea of what the design it will look like and what the scope is. And with this, the total DMWSB participation would exceed $10 million through the life of this contract. The services that we're adding with the scope is really an expansion of the existing services. So the complexity has increased, and so it requires more drawings for one area of work. And so therefore we've been working with the existing subconsultants. So you can see here the list of the subconsultants on this contract. In green is the initial commitment to them for the contract, and in yellow is the amount associated with the amendment. And so it's been increasing pretty much across the board, except for a few firms for which their scope of work is completed. There might be, so the consultant is seeking to add one or two sub-consultants for services during construction, but they will work within the contract amendment that we are seeking today. So as far as the disaggregation...
Commissioner, excuse me. Wait a minute. Commissioner Hardesty has a question on that previous slide.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I was wondering if this was the breakdown that you promised me around, like, where
no.
the documents were going?
No, it's not.
No. Okay, I'll wait.
Thank you.
I believe this is the breakdown you would like to see. So the for this contract, we have about 24% committed to certified firms. And of that 24%, about 68% of it is to minority-owned firms.
Commissioner Hardesty, did you want to say something about that?
Yes, I'm kind of confused. What's an Asian Indian and then an Asian Pacific? I think you mean Asian Pacific Islander, but I'm not sure what an Asian Indian is.
Asian Indian, it's the terms that come out of the COVID. Asian Indian would be a person from India in that case. Asian Pacific, I don't know the full realm of what it includes, but in part of it here includes somebody from Sri Lanka, I think. So I don't know all the specific ethnicities that are in that category.
Yeah, that makes two of us. It doesn't paint a clear picture of who's getting the dollars. I don't know if that's a mistake or if that's purposeful, that 4.9, well, it is definitely predominantly male. I know that, I can see that. But I'm not quite sure what community is represented by Asian Indian.
That's isn't that a further breakdown? If we had lumped it all together with Asian Pacific Islander, then it would have just been the aggregates of 4.9 and 3.2.
I mean, I've never
this
heard
giving
of,
you more.
Of Asian Indian. I've heard of Asian Pacific Islander, but I have never heard of Asian. This is a new category to me, unless it's something that you guys use all the time. I've never heard of it.
I believe these are the COVID categories that are in the COVID.
In a state system?
Yeah, that those are the categories.
Yeah, it doesn't actually correlate to what we do at the city. So again, I'm just trying to understand who we're hiring and who's benefiting from these dollars.
Well, it gives you more information than if we had just said Asian Pacific Islander and added those two up.
I don't think it does. How does it give me more information? Nobody can identify what an Asian Indian is except for there's a state category that they pulled it out of. That doesn't answer my question.
If I could
wait. It's a person from India. Go ahead.
Yeah, my experience with the Asian category is increasingly broken down into three components. Asian, which many people, when they hear it, think of as Japan, Korea, China, Asian Pacific Islander, as Commissioner Hardesty expressed, is usually Philippines and Hawaii and the islands, and then, which usually has the biggest disparities, and then Asian Indian is, of course, India, but also I think Sri Lanka, so some of those Indonesian countries. That's how I've heard it in the education sector.
So I've heard-
Thank you, Commissioner, that's helpful.
Yeah, that is very helpful, thank you. I'm noticing that we're not finding too many women to subcontract with. And that seems to be, I'm wondering just kind of why that is.
So if we could continue with the presentation, I think that our guests are going to address that issue.
Answer that. Okay. And yes, hopefully you'll also address who the firms are that are getting these resources. Thank you.
Just about to. So maybe if we could just finish the presentation, that would be helpful.
Okay. Oh, well, you called me, so that's why.
Yes, the firms, if we want to get to them, it was on the previous slides, and we could look at that at the end of the presentation, is what I'm hearing. So with this, though, when we entered into this contract initially, it was the biggest, and it remains the biggest contract that BES has at this point. And we realized that they were relying on a lot of some consultants and certified firms to provide the work. And so we started this support program. And I'm going to turn it over to Nikki. She is the lead on this program on the contract. So Nikki.
Great. And you're right. Thank you. I did get that wrong, that Sri Lanka is included in Asian Indian. I was pulling up my spreadsheet. Yes. You are the winner on the the categorization.
The good news is we are having dialogue like this now. So
that's yeah. So I'm really excited to tell you about the DMWSB support program. So my name is Nikki Pozos. I'm with the Formation Lab, and I'm leading the support program for the design team as part of the Jacob CH2M Hill team. So we really saw this is BES's largest consultant contract, and there's a big team of DMWSB firms, so we really saw an opportunity to make an investment in those firms. So there's two goals of the program. One is that we want 100% success on this project for those firms. And then the second is really to enhance their long-term capabilities and capacity. So we came from the philosophy that firms know what they need best, and we met with each firm who's interested in participating at the beginning of the project and sat down with them to really understand their business and work with them to identify support activities that would be impactful to them right now. And that ended up with 32 customized support activities were identified. You can do next. So when we think on professional services, when people think about supporting firms, there often is a focus on technical support. And there were some activities that were identified that did focus on technical support, but I would say more of the needs were in the managerial and kind of firm-wide processes and procedures categories. This is just three examples from some of the minority-owned firms that were working on the project. I'm just going to pick one here. With one firm, Elcon, we are helping them update their office-wide quality control program. So we didn't do it for them. We coached them through the process of updating it, and they're in the process of testing it on the STEP program and two other projects. And then we're going to work with them to revise it based on that experience. We're also taking a number of metrics on the programs to really make sure that the support giving is having an impact on the project and on the firms. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Nikki. So now I would like to spend some time to talk about the community benefits agreement. As we mentioned earlier, this is the first implementation plan relative to the resolution that was passed in 2017. So we started pretty early into the pre-design. As soon as Kiewit was on board, essentially, we started meeting. We had bi-weekly meetings since then first to translate what's in the resolution into something that's that we can implement and what it meant in actions. And then this led to finalization of a STEP-specific CBA and the formation of an advisory committee in June 2020. We've had two meetings to date with the committee. And the idea with the committee is that it provides feedback to the contractor and the team as far as meeting the goals of the CBA, but it's also a sounding board and a partner when Kiewit approaches them with their plan and telling them what they see in the future and what their needs are in the future. So I'm going to turn it over to Bill Mariucci from the Kiewit team so that he can tell us where they stand as far as CBA.
Thank you, Muriel, and thank you, members of the council, for the opportunity to speak briefly here today. My name is Bill Mariucci, and I'm an area manager with Kiewit Infrastructure West based in the Portland area. My role on the project will be to oversee our work as a principal in charge to ensure the project team has every resource they need for success. Now, as Muriel mentioned, I've been deeply involved with the community benefits agreement on the project to date. In that time, I've come to the conclusion and firmly believe the CBA will provide the direction, the resources, and the commitment from all of the necessary stakeholders to ensure the STEP project serves as a model job for the local contracting and workforce in the community. As stated in that last bullet on this slide, we've developed a subcontracting and workforce plan based on both the CBA and our prior working experience with local firms, the trade unions, and community-based organization. We look very much forward to putting the plan in action on this STEP project. We're also looking forward to working again with Andre Baugh of Group AGB, who will provide guidance and direction on all community contracting and workforce matters. I'm gonna turn it over to Andre, who will provide an overview of the community contracting and workforce program.
Thank you, Bill. Good afternoon, commissioners. Andre Baugh, diversity and supplier manager for this project with Kiewit. I'm gonna give you an overview of the goals that the CBA has and what we're committed to as Kiewit to not only meet but exceed. First, the CBA has a goal of 22% for DMWSB. D is disadvantaged business, M is minority business, W is women-owned business, and the ESB is emerging small businesses. And that's disaggregated into 12% DBE and MBE, 5% WBE, and 5% DMWSB. It can be any of those categories. The second goal that it has is apprenticeship. So 20% of the workforce hours by trade shall be apprenticeship by principal trades for the entire project are to be apprentices. And within that 20%, 31% are to be either women or minorities. And that's disaggregated into 22% minorities and 9% females. And of the total workforce, 28% are to be minorities and women. That's disaggregated into 22% minority and 6% females. Our focus as employers is as employers to hire local workforce, and Kiewit's committed to meeting or exceeding these goals.
Okay, thanks, Andre. So this slide provides an overview of the breakdown of the construction workforce plan for both phases of the project. When I say both phases, it's GMP1, you can see it in there in the table, and GMP2. And what we're here to talk specifically about today is GMP1. So how do we plan to achieve, and as Andre mentioned, exceed the goal set forth by the CBA? First, we will work proactively with each trade union and others to plan for the project needs. And that's largely what this table is starting to do right as of today. We'll meet regularly with the trades to review the status, and we'll do 3, 6, 12-month forecasts for number of workers needed at all levels, including apprentices and workforce diversity. Second, we'll be proactive with local pre-apprenticeship programs in recruitment, training, internships, and other opportunities to attract individuals to the construction industry, specifically those from disadvantaged and minority communities. Third, we will monitor, report, and enforce compliance with all of our subcontractors to the workforce commitments of the CBA, starting during procurement and continuing throughout construction. And fourth, we recognize the importance of establishing a positive job site culture for all employees on the project. We'll set expectations from day one through orientation programs that will emphasize policies and procedures of a harassment-free workplace. We'll support retention through continuous training and promote an inclusive atmosphere without barriers for all workers. We'll provide cultural competency training to all of our managers and supervisors while reviewing their performance annually. And we'll continually monitor each sub's commitment to the positive workplace culture through observation, interviews, and data collection from all the firms. And finally, we'll work closely with all the local resources, including those pre-apprenticeship organizations, to tailor our workforce hiring and training program to the local community while building a program of best practices to further the development of the construction workforce in the local area. And now, Andre, I think we have one more slide. Oh,
Bill, before you move on, please, could you remind me what GMP stands for?
So that's guaranteed maximum price. So it's a contract term. I guess another good way of looking at it is it's phase one of the project. And then GMP2 is phase two of the project. And within a timeline, phase one or GMP1 is the first 2 years of the job, call it 2021-22. GMP2 is phase two, is the years 2023 and 2024. And you can see that GMP is the more substantial component of the overall STEP program.
Thank you. And Commissioner Hardesty has a question, and then Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you. How many pre-apprenticeship will become journeyman, and how many pre-apprenticeship will become apprentice and then become journeyman through both phases of this project?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And one of the, I'll say, the benefits and advantages of this particular project at a four-year duration, I mean, we would hope a lot. And to the extent you see the number of apprentices there in that table, the 16 in GMP1 and the 43 in GMP2. Now those are the minimum set by the CBA goal numbers. Based upon the level that they come to the job in their apprenticeship training, with the benefit of a multiple year job, we would really hope that the vast majority of those numbers will advance from apprenticeship into the journey level.
And so I would hope more than just hope. I would want to see some real hard numbers about what the expectations are if we have a four-year project. I don't want to just hope, because when we hope, we don't get the results that we want.
Understood.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you. I'm in the same part of the graph, and I think I just need a little further clarification. I was appreciating the conversation that was just going on between you and Commissioner Hardesty. So I don't know if I'm reading this right. It says 16 apprentices, right? And then six minority, five women. Does that mean of the 16, 11 are in that category?
Correct.
And that's the same with the GM P2?
Correct.
Okay. And, you know, because we all know that apprentices are that's the place to focus, because that's the pipeline, if you will. And so, yeah, we want to not just hope, we want to see those numbers go up, because they do become journey trades folks. So yeah. Why is the number two so much lower percentage wise than GMP1? Curious. You see what I mean? Because it says 43 apprentices, and of that, 13 are in the categories of minority and women. If in fact, it's the same pattern as you said in GMP1.
I believe when you convert the craft hours to the eaches, if it's a low on the craft hours, what we want to do is work to the side of making sure we have more than enough. And so that's when GMP1, when the numbers are lower, like you see there, we'll say round up, or we'll add to make sure we have enough to make the craft hours and meet the goal. So by the time you get to GMP2 with much higher numbers, you don't have that ratio working for or against you.
And then just for the record, so if it's an African-American woman, they would be counted twice, both in the minority and in the women category?
Yes, and unless Andre, you'd like to expand on that.
Yes, they are. They're counted as minority and then as a female.
Okay, because the gender disparities are always pretty extreme in this workforce, it would be helpful to know how many of the women are also BIPOC going forward.
Agreed. And if I could clarify, I understand completely when I say hope. And I think that when we start talking about working proactively with each trade union, on craft requirements. That's when we convert the hope to reality by talking actual numbers and actual count with the trades to ensure that they will have the people available for the project. And to the extent they do not have the people at that moment in time, knowing that we have been out in front of it, how do we get the people that we need when the work is there? So that's where we want to convert that into a real situation.
Commissioner Hodgsey?
If I could ask another question, please.
I just recognized you.
Thank you. So based on what you just said, that minority women are counted twice, it would be really important for us to know the real number of women that will be under the contract. I am concerned that in the in your design phase, there were no women, no women of color at all. And so we know that, I believe there are more women in design than there are in construction. And so if we were not able to achieve any contracting with women before we get to the construction process, what's gonna be different as you get into the construction process?
Well, I believe when we go to the trades, we will identify those candidates that are out there available for the project in the laboring and operating and electrician trades, the mechanical pipe fitter trades. And so we can identify those, the market, the capacity at an early time. And let's say that we don't see that capacity in the numbers in this table, again, as a floor, then we need to be out ahead of it, working with the pre-apprenticeship programs, outreaching, recruiting, getting people into the trades as apprentices, women, women of color, so that we, when the work comes about, we're able to achieve it. So, I mean, again, with the benefit of the four-year project, we have the opportunity, as long as we are proactive and aggressively proactive, to get the people that we need to achieve the goals and, quite frankly, you know, what the mission here is, which is to really increase the workforce in the area and the diversity of the workforce.
Bill, can I add just a couple of things here?
Sure.
On workforce first, we have not started any construction. So these are projections. Two, as part of the CBA, we have that are actually signatures to the CBA, the pre-apprenticeship programs. So Constructing Hope and others, Youth Builders are part of the CBA. They're acting signatures. They're part of our LMCOC, which is the Labor Management Committee, which provides oversight for this project. So as we move forward from today and go into construction, we're talking to the pre-apprenticeships, we're talking to the unions about how to meet these goals and what do we need to do, what do our subcontractors need to do to meet the goals. So this is the plan, the forecast, but specifically, I think to both of your concerns, we're talking to the pre-apprenticeship programs already, and we'll be talking to them more about how to fill the need for the unions. And if the unions don't have the, if the contractor doesn't have the required workforce, how do we fill that need? So there's an actual process. Our plan lays that out. We'll be in cooperation with everybody according to the CBA and how the CBA is laid out to ensure that we meet these goals. And if there's deficits that we see, the pre-apprenticeship programs are signature to be there to help fill that process. So they're at the table and they're contributors to the process. We have also committed to, even though we double count, that's a city policy, we've committed to disaggregate those goals so we count minority males and we look at just females so we can see the true numbers that we're achieving. So we will have those as part of our process going forward from Kiwa to review with the Labor Management Committee and you if you want each month to see how we're actually doing and where we need to do better. So I think through the monitoring that Bill talked about and things, we will be able to and early as this process allows us to set up a plan to meet and exceed these goals.
Thank you, Andre. And it is a big part of the advisory committee on the CBA is you, the contractor, brings their plan and projections so that it can be early discussions and identification of the needs so that they can be provided from these organizations. And then Kiewit's role is to make sure that the workplace is welcoming and positive so that we keep these folks on board. Should I move to the subcontracting plan slide?
Yes.
Yep, I don't see any other hands right now.
Okay.
So as part of the construction, we are in GMP1 and GMP1, the goal is 22% in the disaggregation, as I stated before. Currently, we have committed 29% DMWSB participation, exceeding the goal. And we still have over 20 items to bid that include from trucking to paving to mechanical, electrical, a number of items that will be going back out to the community. So we anticipate increasing our DMWS participation. Currently of the 29%, over 90% is minorities. Where we're lacking, and just up front, is we're lacking female participation, WBE participation. We're about 2%. So we need to increase that. And that's our focus as we go out and do more participation on GMP1. And again, we still have the majority of the work to bid out in GMP2, which has, again, another set of opportunities, a large set of opportunities for participation. And we'll be doing that the latter half of 21 into the community organizations providing those opportunities. And as we go into 22 to get those subcontractors on board and have them be successful. Also, as part of this process, we're mentoring some subcontractors. And so we're bringing them on board as almost like a mini CMGC. We're providing them the opportunity to get mentoring around equipment management, purchase, how to put together their own GMP and provide that to the city and have that conversation, subcontractor support and management, and just the management approach to managing a larger opportunity. From that standpoint. As we go into GMP2, we will update our diversity plan with the opportunities. Again, how do we maximize the opportunities in GMP2, review that with the city and the LMCOC, and then implement that plan going forward.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is about the check mark at 22%. Yeah. My understanding is this is disadvantaged minority women, emerging small businesses, and I don't know what the SDVBE stands for. I guess it's veterans. Again, that's not disaggregated to the point, whereas I feel comfortable saying 22% are minorities. When we put them all together, I can't tell what percentage will go to minority-owned firms and what percentage won't.
20.
You put women by themselves, and then you have minority and disadvantaged businesses. But we know most of the time, disadvantaged businesses are the winners when you put minority and disadvantaged businesses together. Because again, they're not necessarily minority businesses.
The CBA does not distinguish between DBE. These are per the CBA requirements.
I appreciate that the CBA does it, but we do.
Yeah.
What we're finding is that white men are the beneficiaries of these programs that are supposed to benefit communities of color. And so the CBA may not require it, but we will here at the City of Portland.
Yes, we are, again, our commitment is to disaggregate the DBE, DMWSB, the acronym, SDVB. Currently, right now, 87% of the dollars of the 29% are African-American, 5% are Native American, and if you combine the two, Asian, Asian Indian, Asian Pacific Islander, we get to 3%, and then we have Caucasian at a couple percent, and we have some others undefined. So we, you know, the majority are minority firms, again, minority in those categories, in the dollars today, and we still have work to do to complete the rest of GMP, and we still have the majority of the work in GMP2 that we don't know yet because we haven't put it on the street. And we will report those numbers each month about the disaggregation of the dollars, the firms, the workers, virtually everything. Each month we'll review it with the city.
You're muted, Commissioner.
Oh, I'm sorry. Will that go to procurement? Who will get that information monthly?
Procurement will have it each month.
And I'm going to ask procurement to make sure that we at the City Council get that same data on a regular basis. Monthly would be fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just as a cheat sheet for those at home who are struggling with all the acronyms, we put them at the bottom, what the D and the M and the SDVBE, which was a new one to me. And so that is on the screen at the bottom. Let's keep going.
Okay. Well, this was really our last slide, so we can get into discussions, which we have started already. But so the recommendations and future council actions would be the approval of this guaranteed maximum price one, which is a construction agreement, and it's a report in the amount of $79.6 million. And future council actions would pertain to the approval of the requested amendment to the second reading. And we will come to you again in 2022 for the second, the bigger construction agreement, guaranteed maximum price two, with the associated CBA or diversity plan with it. And this concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much. And thank you to our guests who are here. We've had quite a bit of discussion and moving through it, which I really appreciate the amount of interest that council members have shown. Is anybody signed up for public testimony, Muriel? Keelan?
Yes, we have 6 people signed up.
All right, let's take the testimony and then we'll have some more discussion.
The first
person. Can just call them.
I'm sorry.
You can just call them. Each person will have 3 minutes and just move through. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The first person is Kelly Kupcock.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kelly Kupcock, Executive Director of Oregon Tradeswomen. Thank you so much to the commissioners for this opportunity for Oregon Tradeswomen to express our support for the Community Benefits Agreement on the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. We want to thank everyone at the City of Portland and Bureau of Environmental Services, and specifically Muriel, for her leadership and their leadership in advancing the CBA. We applaud the collaboration of city government, of our community, and labor and management to actualize our shared values of inclusion, equity, and shared prosperity for our region in this effort. Oregon Tradeswomen has long supported the use of community benefits agreements as a best practice tool to ensure responsible development, access to quality jobs, wage equity, and real workforce and contracting inclusion. When implemented with integrity, community benefits agreements can serve as our collective blueprint for prosperity, if you will, in helping our communities realize stronger economic outcomes with public investments. Thank you to the Kiewit team for their pre-construction work in building and designing a diversity model that will truly realize our equity goals as a community. These goals include, in addition to supplier diversity, workforce equity, and subcontractor inclusion, a true commitment to creating respectful workplaces and making sure that our job sites are safe from hate. Oregon Tradeswoman applauds your leadership. Through our advocacy work, technical assistance, and apprenticeship readiness training at Oregon Tradeswoman, we are confident that we can support the project goals and achieving success for everyone. And lastly, we encourage that the council and regional industry stakeholders are able to have, at a minimum, a quarterly report on project outcomes through shared transparent data and a collective commitment by all of us, as Commissioner Hardesty said, to ensure that we are not just hoping, but that we are living and bringing to fruition the goals needed in this project. Thank you so much.
Next up, we
have... Thank you. Next person, please.
Next up, we have Keith Edwards.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everyone today for it's a great presentation. But I want to take a portion of my time that I did not plan on sharing today in regards to the expectations. I don't want the city council to have any unrealistic expectations regarding journey level status. And you have to understand apprenticeship in order to know about this, because an apprentice goes through an apprenticeship and they have to have a diverse and comprehensive training. I'm an electrician. I started out in 1969 in my apprenticeship. And so I know a little bit about that. But I wanted to share with you today that an apprentice, like I say, an electrician has to have a handle or skills in industrial, commercial, and residential. So they can't work on an industrial job site or a commercial job site for 4 years and expect to get their journeyman level. That's not gonna happen because they have to have diversified training. It's required by the state certification. So we have to understand that. So I don't want the council to have any false expectations like we're gonna have one job that an apprentice can start out on and complete their apprenticeship and be a bona fide journey level person. So let's just be clear about that up front. But thank you again for entertaining the thought of using the CBA, because that's going to be something that I think is going to be a model that will be used going forward. It's not perfect, but it is something that I think that we should applaud, because it's a collaboration brought forth by many groups, not only unions, but community-based organizations. And everyone has always been invited to the table. I've been involved with MAWE for quite some time. I'm on the board of Constructing Hope. And so we believe in this, and we know that it works. And it works not only for the workers, but it works also for the contractors as well. It works in regards to diversity, because typically the businesses, the contractors, have a voice at the table, but the workers do not. So this makes sure that the workers are being taken. There's a lot more workers on this project than there will be contractors. So, and I think a lot of times we lose sight of that. We have never been exclusive in developing the comprehensive community benefits agreement. Everyone has always been invited to the table, and it was well thought out, because we know that more minds that are involved with this make it a better plan. So again, thank you, City Council, for entertaining this and being a part of this and asking those questions. And certainly we're available to answer any questions that you may have in regards to making this a success. A happy worker is certainly a more productive worker. And so if the employer's happy and the workers are happy, then this project will go well, and it certainly serves the citizens of the city of Portland much better. Because these workers have health care and other benefits that aren't always realized in a different environment. So again, thank you very much for this discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. That was really helpful. I appreciate your perspective, and especially for reminding us or informing us about the requirements for advancing to journeyman level. I knew that there were various things that the apprentices have to do, but you made it very clear. And I think I agree with you, we should set realistic expectations. I also appreciate, you know, the attention to wraparound services to make a happy employer and a happy worker. So thank you for raising those issues too. Next thank person, you. Please, Keelan.
Next, we have Michael Martin.
Okay, can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, all right. First of all, good afternoon, commissioners. I'll introduce myself. My name is Michael Martin, owner of Northwest Infrastructure. My company has partnered with Kiewit on the STEP project, and we're a full service demolition and excavation contractor. And I wanted to speak to the appreciation, you know, that I have for the city council adopting the CBA. And wanted to speak to just the advancement of my company, specifically that this has brought, you know, to my company. Goes back about, several years, 2012, when I was first a part of the CBA on the project with the Water Bureau. I was not a union contractor at the time. It was a benefit not being a union contractor, and now 2020 being a partner with Kiewit on this project, that the CBA has really helped me as a certified firm. It helps me by making the promises that are laid forth in the CBA reality with its oversight. I'm very excited with this opportunity and look forward to delivering on all goals that are laid forth. And just wanted to just, you know, put my appreciation, you know, make that known that the CBA is something that has been a benefit, and I'm excited to be a part of another opportunity with Kiewit on this project.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mark Matthews.
Thanks, commissioners, for giving us the time to be here and talk to you. I'm Mark with Pacific Mark Construction. Been working here in Portland for the last 20 years as a general contractor, doing small business. Reason I want to talk about the CBA is how good it's, I think this is going to be, is because in the past, I'm an open shop, and we have been trying to figure ways that we could work with the unions and all these to help bring some of our own workforce to the table to work on these jobs. And I think this is, CBA is one of the looking at the way that's structured, it's going to be one of the good things for us as a small business, and as well as for the community. We know that community and business of colors such as ours, we bring a lot of different minorities to the table. And so the CBA is going to allow us to do that. So I want to say that given the opportunity to have these expectations, I think we can blow them. Go higher and way beyond that. So I appreciate you guys looking at this and taking it to heed that the CBA is the way to go for all the community and small businesses as a whole.
Thank you.
Next, we have Michael Birch.
Mute myself. Hello, commissioners, and thank you for having me today. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, Michael.
Yes.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here today for many reasons. And to be clear, I'm Michael Birch. I'm with the Northwest Carpenters Union. My title is Community Relations and Outreach. I have been thinking about what exactly to say. I wrote a six-page speech that I could do in 3 minutes, but I don't want to repeat what's already been stated about the benefits of a community benefits agreement. I'd rather speak to some of the pieces of the workforce plan that has been put together by Andre Baum, Muriel, and Kiewit that will help address some of the issues that were brought up, the questions that were brought up in the PowerPoint. Kiewit team reached out early in this process to learn about the CBA requirements. They engaged organized labor, state certified pipeline providers like the pre-apprenticeship programs, minority contracting associations, and they've been, the entire process has been proactive, productive, very professional, and refreshing to me because I haven't seen a CBA since 2012. The LMCLC was formed after two meetings. Has been formed, and after two meetings, we've already accomplished a charter that was finalized and signed by the committee. That's a huge step. Review approval of Kiewit's contracting workforce plan, which is explicitly aligned with the requirements of the CBA. And in my opinion, it's quite extensive. Their goal stated very clearly is to have a harassment-free workplace with accountability from the GC, their leadership, the subs, and the rank and file. From all indications, they're taking the positive job site culture to another level. A contract with OTI to show up and help them with outreach and recruitment, providing cultural competency training for their staff, subcontractors, and obligations for a harassment-free workplace. They have a written outreach and recruitment and retention plan. Annual specific training for Kiewit staff on all portions of the CBA and its programs. Stated goals for retention services designed to grow apprentices from apprentice through the journey level on this project. A commitment to strive for a workplace where minority and women employees are able to recruit, encouraged to recruit for the industry and the product, the project itself, and much more. We want to come back to City Council quarterly and report on the progress once the project has broken ground and we have actual data to share with City Council, disaggregated data. We also understand that some of our colleagues serve on other duplicative committees, for example, the CEIP, to monitor the CEIP, and our hope is, and recommendation, is to work over the next year to figure out how we can avoid some of this duplication and work with city staff to support what works based on real performance data of the CEIPs and the CEIPs.
3 minutes.
In closing, thank you to all of you for supporting the CBA and Kiewit.
Thank you for all of your work over the many years, and I think that's a really great suggestion to have quarterly reports or frequent reports at any rate. Thank you. Next person, please.
The last person we have is Bill Kowalczyk.
Can you hear me? Hello?
We can. Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Very good. Yes, good afternoon, commissioners. It's good to see you all, even if it's on TV. Not used to that. My name is Bill Kowalczyk, and I've worked with Portland Youth Builders for over 20 years. And Portland Youth Builders is a state-certified pre-apprenticeship training program. I served on the pilot CBA LMCLC from 2012 to 16 on the Parks Bureau CBP Advisory Committee. I advised on the recent Multnomah County LMCLC for the County Courthouse and Health Department headquarters projects. And I also report to our pre-apprenticeship consortium partners. That would be Constructing Hope, Oregon Tradeswomen, and Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, known as POIC. And I believe that it helps to think of the CBA as a three-legged stool supporting workforce equity. First leg is the demand for equitable participation that's embodied in the CBA. The second leg is supply of women, people of color, low-income apprentices, and journey workers. And core to this pipeline of this second leg is pre-apprenticeship, because we serve those with the most barriers who are historically left out of the system. And the third leg is oversight of the CBA during construction and in real time. And I know from experience that when the LMCOC functions well, that is, that's the oversight body meeting monthly, communicating between meetings, managing rather than reacting, the LMCOC makes things happen by identifying and intervening in problems to get things all on course. So this third leg, the oversight by the LMCOC, is our focus today. On the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant CBA, we've had two LMCOC meetings so far. Much has been accomplished. In the first two meetings, all the partners serving on the LMCOC have been enthusiastic to achieve the CBA goals. There is an immediate spirit of collaboration for success. We were all oriented to the charter of the LMCOC and adopted this. This means, as of the very first meeting, we have a clear system of governance and a delineation of responsibilities. The CBA document itself provides the blueprint and the point of reference. It provides clarity immediately for the equity expectations of KEWIT, the GC. The letter of assent signed by all the subcontractors commits them to the CBA equity measures, including apprenticeship participation. KEWIT walked us through a detailed subcontractor, supplier, workforce, and training plan. And much of the language is taken right from the CBA and the city workforce training document. And between meetings, Andre, Muriel, and Lisa have all been great communicators, getting all the ducks in a row. So we want and expect to report back regularly to the council on progress once construction begins. So from my perspective, oversight that this third leg of the CBA stool feels like it is off to a very professional, impressive start. It is also my impression that Lester Spittler is working hard to sort through the alphabet soup resolutions and acronyms to bring the city's commitment of funding to the community organizations. And this is the second leg of the stool, scaling up pre-apprenticeship supply. As one who has been in the industry since 1977, sometimes I'm pained by my task of preparing and sending women and people of color into this industry. I'm sorry to say, for every noose we find and is made public, there are scores of other insults and threats to women and people of color. By changing culture and changing institutions, it's hard and it takes action. I'm very encouraged that KEWIT is currently in conversations with Oregon Tradeswomen, our sister pre-apprenticeship program, to provide anti-harassment and intervention training to all job site workers and supervisors. With concrete actions like this, I feel like the CBA and the LMCOC are on the way to knitting together the concepts embedded in the CBA with lessons learned. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes public testimony, Keelan?
Yes, that's correct.
Is there any more council discussion? Not, I can't see the, hang on a second.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question. Go
ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you. For the thoughtfulness of this proposal. And the questions that I am putting to you are not questions based on work that you've done in the past or you will do in the future. It's based on the history of the City of Portland contracting and having aspirational goals that just have not been met. And I know that there are some trades that require different types of experience before they get to journeyman, but that in no way means that we should not be trying to get people from pre-apprenticeship into journeyman status, especially when you have a four-year contract that won't work across the board. But what I know is that many people, as we just heard, because of nooses and other harassment and bullying at the workplace, just actually never make it through the pre-apprenticeship process. The City of Portland has to do better, which means the people we contract with have to do better, which means we have to hold each other accountable to what we say our values are. And I greatly appreciate your willingness to think outside of the normal box. But I can tell you the city is not used to thinking outside of a box, and that box has not served us well. And so the questions I'm asking you, I am asking of everyone who has the privilege of having a city contract, because it's about making sure that the people in the city of Portland prosper from public dollars, and the way we invest them matter. We have not had good outcomes thus far, and with a few exceptions. And so that's why we are attempting to make sure that you understand what our expectations are, and aspiration notwithstanding, we have real clear expectations of what it is we wanna see when we invest these kind of dollars. And so I thank you all for your openness to listen. And again, nothing I said should be construed as me having any concerns about you and your commitment to this project. But I just want to be clear that from where I sit on the city council, my expectations have changed since I've been here, because I know we say good things, but when we actually look at the outcomes do not match the good things we say. Thank you very much. I look forward to us continuing this partnership.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. And this is the latest iteration, and it's a community benefits agreement. It's the first one of its kind. So I hope we're all committed to helping it succeed. Is there a motion to accept the report?
So moved.
I saw Commissioner Howard's lips moving first, so I'm going to go. She moved and Commissioner Ryan seconded. Yeah. I know it's the same with me, Commissioner Ryan. It's just the way it is, but there's no, you don't get points for it anyway. We have a motion and a second to admit, accept the report. Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Oh, I'm up first. Thank you for that that report, and it was really thorough. The CBA dialogue obviously is really important, and I've only had one other meeting in the last month where we dove into this, and my insights that I gathered from this conversation is that, and to your credit at Kiewit, you've been engaged and inclusive from the beginning, at the foundation level. And too often, the missteps in the history have been that this comes up later, and then there's some shenanigans on how you play with the numbers later on, if you will. And so this was very earnest, it was very open. No one was defensive. We were all having great dialogue about how to get there. And so welcome to this work. And I look forward to the quarterly reports. And I also wanna say that we're privileged in the city of Portland to spend this much money on something so important. I don't need to go into graphic detail on this, but I will just say that I've had some real experiences in my life with septic tanks and such. And we all know the eco justice that comes with such infrastructure, lack of infrastructure. In fact, NPR had an article about that this morning in the climate justice category. So this is a really, really important discussion and investment. It's all about clean water and fresh air. When you look at all the goals, you know, that's what success looks like. And so spending this money is really, really important, and doing it right. I know as a homeowner, I always marvel at the fact that the biggest expenses are for infrastructure that no one sees, but that's actually what allows your home to survive the big one. That's my, if I would ask a question, I would have thought of that, but I want more dialogue eventually about how we're really preparing for that big one. I think you know better than anyone, all of you involved with this, that the Cascadia fault is, can't really compare it to any other big ones around the country. It's a matter of when it comes. And so this is a big investment, I hope, to make sure that we are really safe, because we'll rely on this heavily after the big earthquake. Anyway, more dialogue to continue, and I am a big supporter of what I just heard. Hi.
Hardesty.
Thank you so much for your openness and willingness to answer hard questions and really to help us see just kind of what the thought process is moving forward. I look forward to continuing to get updates. I understand quarterly at a minimum. I still would love to see the monthly data, so I will just talk to Lester about just forwarding that on. It is important that we live up to what our aspirations are, and I want to challenge you to exceed what our aspirations are. As we know, we have a lot of people who are desperate for good quality employment, and this is an opportunity to reinvest in people while we're reinvesting in our infrastructure. I vote aye.
Francis.
Thank you, colleagues, for investing the extra time this afternoon for this really important discussion. I noticed that Commissioner Fish signed once the previous contract, and so I really honor the work that he did, not only to set up this project, but also on the community benefits agreement process. I think he'll be very happy with the way this one is going. I appreciate the report to council, and I know that with the people on the committee, the oversight committee, they are not going to let the dust gather under their feet if the goals are not being met. So this was a process that the community asked for, that the community is fully invested in. Thank you to Lester Spittler and to Muriel, whose name I mashed before, so I'll try not to do that. I won't even attempt it, I think. Thank you also to Nikki Posas from the Formation Lab, Andre Barr from Group AGB, and Bill Mariucci for Kiewit, and the STEP general contractor. This is a really important project, as has been noted. I appreciate the increase in scope to have a new building. Retrofitting old buildings is just not going to be as resilient or as green as the new one in this case. And appreciate not only the opportunities for minority and diverse contractors, but also the support that was mentioned to make sure that the workers and the employers are supported and successful. So let's hope that when you get to the end of this project, that there will be a glowing audit report saying, well done, we're finally on the way to getting things right. I would love to see that. Thanks again, I vote aye. The ordinance is a non-emergency one and it moves to second reading. With that, I believe we're done with the agenda. Is that correct, Keelan?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm sorry, wasn't this a report? Didn't we just vote on the report?
We voted on the report and then there was the second ordinance. The second item was the ordinance. We heard them both together.
Oh, okay. When you said second reading, I was like, huh, what? Okay. I got it. Thank you.
Good. Okay, then in that case, thank you everybody for participating and good work. We are adjourned.
Thank you.